Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What parent has not had an issue with babies sleeping or with sleeping themselves with the newborn nearby? We'll have some ideas on how to make it easier on mom, dad, and baby in just a couple of moments. But first, the aftermath of the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson put a number of problems of police-community relations before the nation. Now, a different way to get the public's attention, the stage. An original play is about to be presented in St. Louis. It's titled Black and Blue, and it's homegrown. The author, actors, and producer are all St. Louisans. Several are with us in studio. Cecilia Nadal is founder and executive director of Gitana Productions, a nonprofit dedicated to cross-cultural awareness. Lee Patton Childs is a director and playwright who wrote Black and Blue. We also have two actors with us. Carolyn Moore is a community actor. Her father, by the way, was a homicide detective, which brings the story close to home for her. Valerie Felix is a community actor and Ferguson activist and is a student at Pattonville Heights Middle School. I thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I get the impression in getting ready for this program that you all have or have developed a personal connection to the Ferguson story.
Oh.
I'd like to ask you, each of you, very briefly, to kind of explain what that connection is. Cecilia, I'll start with you.
Well, it is very personal for me. As soon as Michael Brown was killed and when the protests began, I was out there for 2 weeks daily trying to figure out what happened, who was involved, what people were feeling. I did not have a sense at that time that it would wind up being a play. Really, it was just me as a citizen wanting to be a part of listening to what was going on. It then became a play, and so I have an investment in assuring that we're working with the topic in a balanced way and that it will contribute to peace and harmony, but also to be very direct about justice issues as well.
Right. Valerie, let me turn to you. As the youngest member of our panel here, what's your connection to it?
My connection is, I guess, my little brother, because when it first happened, I kind of felt like, what if that was my brother? And it just drew me towards the protesting. And so I kind of talked my mom into letting me go out protesting with her. And I just grown to love it ever since.
All right. Patton, you're an integral part of this story. Needless to say, you wrote it, your connection.
Well, it was through, I knew it was going on, and I did not go up to the protests, but Cecilia had already asked me to write a play with her, and it was supposed to be called After the Pause, about women who've been through menopause, and I thought, no problem.
Well, there's a sharp turn in the road,
yeah,
isn't it?
It was a very sharp turn. So since I was, you know, we have the time period, and that's where it was going, and she goes, how about Michael Brown? And I said, okay. It was just a really, but it needed to be done.
Yeah.
It really did.
Carolyn, how about your connection?
Oh, I have a lot of connections. You know, thinking about Michael Brown, he graduated from the same high school I graduated from. I'm a graduate of Normandy Senior High, class of 87. You know, my father being a police officer, growing up, I mean, not growing up too far from that community. So it's a lot of different connections. So it was kind of like blew my mind with the national attention that it gotten, and you know, I just had to really think and meditate about what was going on.
Obviously, the play is about the connection between the community and the police. Well, let me just stay with you for a moment with regard to how you were watching all of this unfold in Ferguson, particularly because there was that dynamic, that tension between police officers and the community.
It just, you know, it made me feel uncomfortable. Couldn't sleep at night just thinking about what was going on. What can I do to make change? What can I bring to the table? I kind of got, you know, just uncomfortable. I have to do something, but what do I do? You know, and then I'm thinking about, I have a 4-year-old little boy that I have to raise. How am I going to teach him about what's going on out here? The issue with how to deal with police officers, not to, you know, you have to do what they tell you. Don't be aggressive with them so they don't get scared and, you know, we won't have these type of problems. Other thoughts went through my head. It's like, I wish this never happened. You know, I was on Facebook, watching the news, on TV. I was like, why did this have to happen? You know, why did Michael Brown's mother have to lose her son like that? It's just, it was a lot of emotion that was going through me.
Let me just be clear. Have you already had what we call the talk with your child at age four?
No, not the age four. But we had the talk with my younger brother. We had to talk to him. You know, he's also my, you know, my father's son. And even though we are children of a police officer, mm-hmm. you know, him being an African-American male, you know, he's a very intelligent young man. But, you know, we have to tell him you have to be very careful with police officers. If they stop you, you know, you really have to just cooperate with them so we won't have some of these type of issues that come up.
Let me take that to Valerie now for just a second. What was your impression of, and what were you thinking about police officers as you were involved in the demonstrations following the shooting?
Well, I knew that not all officers were bad, but, you know, once you see that all the officers were acting a certain way, it could kind of change your perspective on everything. Like, when I was out protesting, you would see how the officers were laughing, and you don't know if it was because they felt it was funny or if it was a nervous laugh. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was just kind of inappropriate to laugh at around a situation like that.
Cecilia, what did you see that made you think we have to say something about this? We have to put this in perspective.
I saw a great deal of energy and emotion and anger expressed constructively by the protesters that I was with. At the same time, having been someone whose father was a soldier, and I actually taught policemen at one point at St. Louis Community College, I felt sorry for them. I saw them stepping into shoes that if they had a choice, they probably would not have asked to be there. But nonetheless, I saw justice coming from behind the rock to the forefront. And so what occurred to me was that we must get perspective that these are people, and people with whatever inadequacies they have, whether it's the police or whether it's the protesters. And we've got to get above the ideologue stage, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and get to the humanity stage mm-hmm. so that we can get to the issues. So what started to gel for me is, how can we get people to step back a little bit, analyze what's going on, remember the human element on both counts, and then start to analyze the issues in a realistic way?
Patton, the burden falls upon you as the writer to put all this together, and using a word that Cecilia used earlier, with balance, mm-hmm. because it could be very easy, I would think, to kind of tilt one way or the other.
That was the biggest challenge of the whole thing, because first of all, the media had tons and tons and stuff about out there. There were blogs. There was more video than you'd ever want to watch. And all of it would lean one way. And then it was really difficult to find, and I'd keep hunting. And I hope Christian Johnson calls in, because he was a lifesaver. But getting to get the police thing was a hard part.
Getting to the police thing, just elaborate.
Yeah. Getting they all circle the wagons, and that's just the way the culture is. And I did not want to criticize them. I did not. I just wanted to hear their story. But we finally were able eventually to get people who had been, you know, who come out and they would talk. But it took a longer time than it did with the protesters.
What is the structure of the play?
We start with what it's like. We start with what it's like in the act one. We'll end with Michael Brown being shot. And then after that, you go on to how the people are dealing with it.
Again, I'll ask you to elaborate just a bit on how the people are dealing with it. Do you have confrontations on stage between the people and police, or how do you deal with it?
Actually, I've tried to make – I didn't want to see – anybody get shot. I didn't think that was appropriate. So that happens off stage. The taunting and humiliating things yelled at the protesters happens from off stage. So we're just taking in whatever the person is taking in and not having to, you know, spell it out exactly.
So you're basically recreating the event.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
With a lot of commentary and a lot of behind the scenes, what do you think? What are we going to do?
Right. Carolyn, let me turn to you with regard to being an actor, having lived through this in real time, in real life. Now you're on stage doing it. Give me some sense of what that's like for you.
It's, you know, you go through the emotions. Sometimes I cry. I'm a mother, and, you know, I have the challenge to raise my son in this society. And so it's a challenge. You have to bring yourself to the plate and just, what are you going to do? You're going to get out and protest, or, you know, you're going to talk to people? You know, how are you going to make change? How are you going to make a difference? So it's making me think about those things.
Why did you decide to become involved in the play?
I decided because I looked at it and it's like, wow, this would be something that would help me start getting involved. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to do. I was supposed to participate with an organization called MORE. I think it's Missouri Citizens for Change. And I hadn't had the time because I'm, you know, raising my little boy. And so when I had some time open to do something, I thought this would be a good opportunity to start getting involved with this issue.
Valerie, why did you want to be involved in the play?
I wanted to be involved with the play to show that there is always two sides of the story and that no matter how you feel, you should listen to both sides without any bias.
Cecilia, before we take a break, what do you hope the takeaway will be from people who watch the play?
Reflection. Having the benefit of taking time to look backwards instead of staying in the moment of what happened at the protest. Understanding that we're not watching television, but we're looking at real people with emotions and with histories that come to the place of the protest. So if people walk out and say, you know, there really are two sides, we really do need to look to not presume guilt on either side, but we need to get to know the other party before we make a statement. If that happens, I would feel very good about that.
The real thing is certainly a lot different from the way it's portrayed on television.
That's
There's
right.
no question
oh
about
gosh.
That. I have to
right.
take a break. Let's do that now, and I'd like to get the listening audience into the discussion. Ferguson has been such a big part of our dialogue here for so many months now. I'm sure people have some points of view. We already have a couple of calls. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. If you'd like to send us an email, do so at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or if you'd like to send us a tweet, you can do that as well. We'll come back and continue the conversation about the new play, Black and Blue, with Cecilia Nadal, Lee Patton-Childs, Carolyn Moore, and Valerie Felix. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Cecilia Nadal, Lee Patton-Childs, Carolyn Moore, and Valerie Felix. Before I go to the phones, we do have a couple of calls. One thing I want to be sure, Patton, I'll turn this to you. The fact that we're talking about Ferguson in the play, you're talking about the whole cast,
right.
everybody involved, talking about Ferguson. But the lessons learned are really designed to be applied everywhere.
Yes, because that was one of the things that was most challenging about writing this, is it just kept happening over and over and over all across the United States. And there were like 8 shootings after Michael Brown. And I'm sure there are more now. I finally had to stop listening.
You know, I wonder, and we've talked about it a number of times in this program, if because of the Michael Brown shooting and the fact there have been so many incidents since, that there is a real energy on the part of the public here and elsewhere for change. I wonder, Carolyn, I'll put this to you. It's not an easy question necessarily. Do you think it's different this time, the way people are reacting, than other than cases prior to Michael Brown?
It looks like people are a little – they are coming out and protesting. They are – not happy with what they see is happening, and so they want to work on this issue, you know. And I think people are a little bit more organized because when the Michael Brown shooting happened, it was kind of like by surprise. It caught me off guard. And so now that this has had a lot of worldwide media attention, yes, people are now saying, you know, look, this is, we cannot accept this behavior. We need to work on it. So,
Patton, you think it's different this time?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope this is kickstarting the second part of the civil rights movement, and it needs to happen.
Valerie, you're too young to remember, to go very far back, but what do you feel? Do you think there's a different mood now?
I think it's different, but I also don't think it's different because, like, I can go back to the 60s a little bit, but how they protested in the officers now and then, they kind of reacted the same way, and the protesters reacted the same way, but still kind of different because I think it's more organized than what it was back then.
And what about you, Cecilia?
Well, I'm hopeful, and yeah, that's what I must say.
Yeah.
But I'm also a realist, too. I agree, actually, with Valerie that the behavior on the spot was pretty similar.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah,
I've seen some television pieces that have looked at how the police reacted in the civil rights period at Selma and how they reacted here in St. Louis. And there's a lot, you know, we didn't really learn from that. And we saw repetition. On the other hand, you know, I feel that things like the Ferguson Commission and some of the work that some of the clergy is doing and trying to remedy is hopeful. What bothers me, though, is that there is kind of, we've got to do something right now about it, and we're not putting the science into it to really examine where our best investments could be. And so I see a lot of money being thrown out there that has no direction. It just is meant to be a PR response. That bothers me. I'd like to see more systemic work being done and more activism, frankly. And that activism doesn't have to be just protests. It needs to be other efforts as well.
Patton, do you bring this hopefulness into the play?
I hope so. Yes, I do. Yeah. Because it is – there's in one of the lines in the plays, we're at the crossroads. We really are. We either have to keep going forward or we'll be stuck in the same place. And we must move on if we're going to be any kind of society at all.
That's the message? That the overriding message, do you think, of the play?
That would pretty much sum it up for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have a list here, a long list of where the performances are going to be. I'll read it before you leave, but it's all going to be on our website. People don't often have the chance to write everything down, but our website, stlpublicradio.org, will have the information. Let's go to the phones. We'll start in Ferguson. We'll bring in Ron, who's been waiting the longest. Ron, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, if all of this stuff is evolved around the Black Lives Matter kind of scenario, you know, since this has happened, there have been six people murdered that have been associated with the Mike Brown. Two of his friends have been murdered. You had the two girls in North St. Louis who have been charged with looting. You had 400 people arrested, 200 of them with felony looting charges. When are we going to get it to start having plays and campaigns at the real root of Black Lives Matter? If you look at the Freddie Gray situation in Baltimore, there have been 35 murders in Baltimore since he was killed, and they have over 1,000 unsolved homicides. So my thing is, if you're really trying to solve the Black Lives Matter issue, you need to also focus on some other areas where the numbers are 100 times worse than what was happening in some of these bad cases with rogue police officers.
Ron, thank you so much for the call. Who would like to respond to Ron? I mean, he certainly has a valid point. Nothing stopped with the Michael Brown shooting or the subsequent shootings.
Well, I feel what he feels, and that is that we need to see some substantial change. And certainly the efforts that we're making with the play is not to make those changes, but to stimulate some thinking about where those changes need to start and end. And people have to think about their own position before they align with strategic steps that will make that change. So I know what he feels. We feel that too.
Using the stage and plays to kind of direct people's thinking or help guide people's thinking is nothing new, Pat, and you would probably know that as well as anyone.
Exactly.
It's a technique that's been used for a long, long time.
Yeah, and it's actually becoming more in use just lately because people want to see, and involving community has also become an increasingly popular way to do this. But putting the community and the professionals together to work and get those points across and help make those bridges. And it's baby steps every time, every place you go.
And you are certainly taking this to the community, as I'll point out when I read
all
the list of where you're going to be. You're all over the place, as it were. Let's take another call. Rich joins us from the Bevo Mill neighborhood. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, hi, Don.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call again.
Sure.
And a hello to Patton.
Hello.
Who I've not seen at the library where I work in recent years very often. What I wanted to say was in the early remarks of the conversation, when you brought up the talk, it just hit me listening to Morning Edition yesterday about this Camden police officer who said that the police basic mission in black neighborhoods is to enforce Jim Crow. And it continues to go on in there more implicitly than it had been, say, before the Civil Rights Act. And, that's just kind of like, bang, an epiphany for me there. And as it was also that there are two sides of the coin with the name black and blue. So that's pretty much what I had to say.
All right, Rick. Rich, thank you so much for the call. Cecilia, this takes us back to where we were earlier on with regard to there are certainly some cops out there who have this attitude, and perhaps it'll never change.
Yeah. Like any other place that we might go to, we could go to priest, we could go to education, we could go to corporate CEOs. There's good and bad everywhere, and that is just a given. What makes this more than just good and bad is that it affects a whole population of people. And I see black young men as much a victim as police officers, because the basic policies that exist within police departments are really authorized by higher level people.
Yeah.
And so when you have a police officer who's put on the line and he's told, shoot first if you think your life is involved, rather than look at mitigating realities that could be there, then we have to go to the top for that. So victims are both police officers as well as black young men.
And the top often is old school, if I
That's
can put,
right.
it,
Absolutely.
Can put it that way.
Absolutely.
Carolyn, your thoughts about that? It was our conversation about the talk that prompted Rich's call.
Yes, I look at the media and I see what's going on in the black community. It looks like we're under attack. And so, until we're able to get a handle on what's happening, we want to save lives, we want to preserve the lives of our men. And so, yes, the talk is very important, how you interact with police officers and not to, get hostile with them or make them upset. I mean, I have to do that myself. If I'm doing something and I get stopped by the police, I always have to keep in mind that, I need to remain calm. And, if they give me a ticket, just take the ticket and just work it out from there and not just, and I know there's a lot of more complex issues that, police officers have to deal with. And, I'm looking at it from both sides as well. I understand that that's a very dangerous job. So when you're out there, your life is on the line. And I do, understand that, empathize with that. But then I also understand African-American men, they're targets. They're profiled. I have been profiled as well. I'm not going to say what neighborhood I'm in. But I was driving, and a cop was following me home. And I'm looking, and I was kind of angry about it, kind of egotistical about it, because I'm like, well, I'm from St. Louis, and, my father used to work for the St. Louis City Police Department. But, yes, I have also been profiled.
Yeah.
So I don't like the way that feels, but we have to, deal with this and just understand that that's the environment that we're in. And, right now we just want to save lives, want to keep people so we can help them, connect to their higher selves and just, hopefully work out and things will get better.
We only have a few seconds left, and I'll just go quickly down the table. I think, Carolyn, you just had a very eloquent say there, so I'll bypass you as we go to the rest of the people on the panel. Patton, the takeaway from this discussion. I know what you want the takeaway from the play to be. What about what we're talking about now?
I hope that this gets people into the theater, that they will come, they will see, and I hope we have a very diverse crowd so you can listen and learn from each other.
That's important. Valerie?
What I want people to get out of this conversation is that people understand both sides, but I just want them to be able to come to the play and see that both sides of the story, and so we can help mend what's began.
Cecilia, final word.
We can only have rational change if we start with where we are as individual people and then look outward and then define how we are part of the change. And I hope that makes sense. But I cannot say to anyone else what needs to be done until I look at what my own feelings are and where they come from and how I'm looking at this situation. Let me say that I know white people who are outraged by what has happened and are finding that amongst their own friends, their view about this is shocking to them. I find black people who look at this and have different views, and suddenly they're looking at who they are. So this conversation starts with us first. Who am I? Why do I have the views that I have? What influenced that? And then it goes out to, how am I going to be a part of the change? And I hope this play will at least start that thinking.
Well, people will have the opportunity to begin that reflection or further that reflection. Performances at the Missouri History Museum run from May 22nd through the 24th. The play we're talking about is Black and Blue. It will also be presented over a four-week run at the Kranzberg Art Theater from May 29th through the 31st, the Greater St. Mark Family Church on June 7th, St. Louis Community College at Florissant Valley from June 19th through the 21st. All of this information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Folks, thanks so much for being with us. Cecilia Nadal, Patton Childs, and Carolyn Moore and Valerie Felix. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Good luck with the play.
We're looking forward to seeing it. Coming up, Babies and Sleep. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.